Bethan Garamond-Merkel.
And I'm Virginia Schutte, and this is Meteor, the honest podcast about science communication with impact.
Listeners, we invite you to think of this episode as a conversation between mid-career professionals during a coffee break at a conference. So elbow in, grab your coffee, give us a holler.
Yeah, we feel like there are lots of good SciComm spaces already devoted to entry-level skill building, so we'd like to share some of the advanced user conversations we are already having with one another without you.
And we don't want to do this without you. We want to open up these conversations beyond just the two of us. We do want to hear what you think. And you can connect with this convo on Twitter or through our website, both of which are linked in the show notes. So today we're talking about volunteering, and I grew up volunteering. My mom had us enrolled in 4-H and other civic programs starting around age 7. So it's a pretty intrinsic part of how I engage with the world and my community. And a lot of what I know how to do developed out of skills that I learned in volunteer settings. I can get pretty invested and also even sentimental about the idea of volunteering.
So I'm laughing to myself because as an alternative perspective, I have no intrinsic love for volunteering. I remember quitting the Girl Scouts after at Girl Scout camp. We saw a baby copperhead in the woods one day. And then the next day they were like, free for all. Everyone literally roll on the ground. And I said, no. And they said, well, you're going to clean the latrines as punishment. Never being like, you know what? Volunteer organizations like that, you can move on without me. So that's where I'm at.
My word. Okay, so I have not heard that story. I'm going to be processing that in the background. To keep us moving here today, though, this sort of dual experience is getting at the heart of why we wanted to talk about volunteering on this podcast. You can find a lot of articles about volunteering in STEM spaces and about how people who have the money to pay their own way to a location or can afford to not get paid to work are going to have more access and opportunities. So there's lots of kind of sketchball sides to the reality that systemically volunteering can suck, and an equitable system would do away with volunteering and every opportunity would come with resources.
But we know that practically, even if the system were to completely change and everything were to magically be funded forever, that would not happen overnight. So even if people believe that everyone should get paid for everything, there will still be volunteer opportunities today and tomorrow. And you will have to decide in the near future, at least, if you're going to go after those opportunities or not. So in the practical world, what's a person to do?
The bummer, or maybe the great thing here, is that nobody can decide whether you do something for free but you.
Yeah.
So for example, these days, there's some things I've learned that I have to charge money for, or I won't prioritize them, or I might even wind up resenting the project, especially if I'm doing it for colleagues or professional friends. And for me, a key one here is illustration. I can't do that for free anymore. But on the other hand, there are things I can do for free, like mini or like really condensed versions of some of my workshops can be invited talks for colleagues at other universities. And that's because it's part of my day job. So maybe it doesn't seem like volunteering, but it's definitely outside of what I need to get done on the daily. So I do think of it as doing it for free. And the reason that this can work for me right now is that invitations are one of the metrics that my department uses to understand whether I'm making a meaningful contribution to my field. And since most of my colleagues don't work in SciComm, so I'm in an ecology department, doing things that translate or map onto their standard expectations can be really important for them being able to evaluate me productively.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned resenting projects. If you get put in a volunteer situation that doesn't work out well, I'm going to be sitting with that for a second. For me, it's a totally different calculation for what volunteering I say yes to or seek out. I honestly, probably compared to other folks, do very little volunteer work because I'm not salaried and I have a family to support. So I just have a lot less allowance to spend on unpaid time and work. And there are absolutely no regularly scheduled external performance reviews for me as a freelancer in any way. However, both of those things together do not mean that there's nobody who values my volunteer time. It just means that I have to be selective about it. So when I talk to people about freelancing, I've been told this same thing from multiple people in disconnected conversations, that if you're going to say yes to a job or a gig, that there's an imaginary triangle and the points are made up of passion, prestige, and pay. And so a useful kind of guideline might be that to say yes to a project or a job, you have to hit two of those corners of your triangle. I like to add on a fourth P word to make it into an imaginary square instead of a triangle. So then it ends up being passion, prestige, pay, and people, because I find that for me, I'm willing to do a lot more that's unpaid if it's not for me, but if it's for lifting up the community that I'm a part of. So student groups, if somebody contacts me and says, we really want you to just attend our Q&A panel on careers outside of academia, but we can't pay you. If it's a student group, and I know that they'll, you know, record it and share it widely afterwards, so it's wide access, I'm way more likely to say yes to that than just somebody who wants to talk to me for free one-on-one for an hour. So if I'm lifting up community, if I'm somehow contributing to people who aren't me, then that fourth square P point, that makes a big difference for me.
So I like that idea. I haven't actually heard that 3P framework at all. And I like this idea of bringing people into it, because people is where so much of this sits. Mm-hmm. Just to be fussy for a moment, though, I wonder if people fits with passion, because it's a values kind of thing. And if that's what's happening, maybe that P isn't passion, it's purpose. And then it can still be a triangle.
Huh. So first of all, I don't inherently care about the shape of it. But then I think about, if it's a square, then that prestige thing doesn't have to be there at all. I can ignore both pay and prestige, because I feel like the ones that I do for people and passion often are like, I don't put those on my CV. It's not like I get a high level of accolade from it. And so taking out the people, like combining it in with purpose, then means that if there's no pay in it, I have to have some sort of prestige. I guess I could lower my standards for what prestige means in that case. So prestige, yeah, would just be.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I would put serving on a student facilitated panel on my CV as an example of one of the ways that people are looking to me to contribute to my field or to the broader field that people are trying to grow into themselves. And so I think that I don't think I'm disagreeing with you, but I do think that I would frame that as reinforcing that I'm at a point in my career where someone else wants my advice. And then I would leverage that for my evaluation.
Huh. I wonder then if that prestige becomes, so many P words, becomes provable prestige.
Oh, interesting.
Because I have a two-page resume. I don't have lines and lines to fill in a CV environment with. Well, this is fascinating. Fascinating. I will also say that the calculation that I'm doing now, you know, mid-career, is very different from what I was doing in the very beginning of my career. So right after I earned my PhD, when I was first switching from a practicing researcher to a communicator, volunteering was really how I got into this field. I blogged for Ocean Bites for about a year. I curated the I Am Psychom handle, which I don't even know, does that count as volunteering? I mean, yeah, I guess, but why do I think that doesn't count? I don't know. Anyway, I ended up, after I left Ocean Bites, I started my own blog, and I was soliciting and editing other folks' posts to post there too. So volunteering was what got me started. And so I realized that there was still privilege there, because my husband was making income, steady income. He was salaried at that time. And I had other jobs that were paying. They weren't science communication related at all, but they were bringing in income to support the family as well. So I'm actually really glad I did it, even though it's a thing that we kind of counsel people to think carefully about. So I think I like the thing I did without liking the system that leads to those kinds of decisions. So I feel like the articles that say, you know, to people who are deciding whether or not to volunteer, don't volunteer, period. I disagree with those because I see the benefit in what I was able to do. And so even though it was tied up in privilege, like if someone is able to take that opportunity, should they not? So I don't, Bethann, what was, did you, has your calculation changed over time?
I think it probably has. I think there's a couple of things that you're kicking up for me. And real quick, one of them is that saying no to volunteering is often saying no to building relationships or networks, which we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. And that I think sometimes you may not be able to afford to say no to. And we do need to leave some space for that.
Right.
And then, like I said earlier, I'm an inveterate volunteer. And I also did a lot of work to get into the SciComm space. And what's interesting to me is while I was intensively volunteering to transition into SciComm, I was out earning my husband. He was a PhD student. We were in Quebec, which is a French language environment in Canada. His stipend was roughly what a master's student would make at my current institution, minus actual tuition, which he had to pay out of what he was getting paid. Whoa. And then we were also paying international travelers' health insurance for me and paying off my undergrad college loans. And I say all this to touch into your point about privilege and how relative the nature of privilege can be. Huh. We were making very little money, but our needs were met such that I could still do some volunteering to facilitate that career transition. So what did I do? Like you, I ran a couple of unpaid blogs. I edited for the local newspaper. Then later I did a free column for a different local paper when we moved to Wyoming. In that whole mix, I co-founded the communication and engagement section of the Ecological Society of America. And I probably spent like a quarter to a half-time job on that. And then so much more. So wow. Suffice to say, yes, lots of volunteering was involved with me gaining experience, building my networks, and feeling my way to what part of SciComm I actually wanted to be doing. Sometimes I was on food stamps, like literally, and chewing mice out of the silverware drawer. And for this moment in my life and career where I am right now, I'm where I want to be. And I have to recognize that volunteering got me here. And I think that's part of why it's important to also recognize that no matter what my resources are, I will probably be spending some of my time volunteering my whole life. I wouldn't have gotten here. I wouldn't even know that here is a thing without some of those things that I did for no monetary compensation.
So I want to emphasize this point about where here is, where we have arrived to so far. And I think many of you listeners, if you're intermediate or advanced folks, might be doing this new kind of calculation recently as well. Now that we are starting and running projects and initiatives, what if we have an opportunity that we could give to someone, but we don't have enough extra funds to pay people for it? What if we're the people now who are generating volunteer positions?
Yeah, it's not hypothetical for me right now. I have a credit-based science communication internship that I advertise on a regular basis, and sometimes students take me up on that. I advertised a sort of institutional SciComm internship, if you will, over the summer and into the fall semester for undergraduates in our honors college. And the idea there was that they would work with me and our department to build an alumni communication plan that would have to do with talking about the work that our students do now and trying to connect out to alumni. And for whatever reason, I received zero applications for that internship. None, zip, zilch. Like the internship did not happen. And that was even a paid internship.
Whoa.
So I don't know even if it's so much about getting paid all the time. Like there are other things going on when we offer these opportunities, and sometimes people don't want them or can't them, whatever, you know, there may be other things going on in their life, and any other time in the world, they would have done it, but not this semester. So yeah, not hypothetical, but also I don't know if it's entirely 100% totally zero or nothing about money.
That's a really interesting point, recognizing that some people who are deciding whether to volunteer, then it may not be the money that says that determines the yes or the no. You know what? And this is what, so if we as the opportunity havers are deciding that we don't have money and therefore we should not offer an opportunity, then we are removing the decision for a yes. We're taking that away from other people. And so that's a very transactional way to look at how these opportunities come about and how people make decisions to take them.
And I think this also, I mean, it's, I don't think this is a knot. This is more like the woven rope that makes the knot, but like the stuff is, is like in together. And, you know, sometimes I hesitate to ask someone to be on a panel, or, you know, we haven't had any podcast guests yet because we want to respect that just because I can, or have in the past chosen to work for free, or just because you did, doesn't mean that it's okay to ask someone else to work for free. But then what you're saying is that sometimes that also means that we're not giving someone an opportunity because money may not be their only consideration.
Yeah. So I just want to pause on this podcast aspect for a second. We start and end every episode saying we want to know what you think, which is genuinely true. But we recognize that we're multiple episodes into recording by ourselves and that we hope you will chat with us on Twitter. So it's an actual conversation, not just us talking at you. But I think you're right. It's the framing. This makes me think of the times when I get the most mad when I see volunteer opportunities on Twitter or, you know, advertised on an email list serve or something, when I like yank up my britches and I like put my hands on my hips and I call someone out on social media because I'm feeling that feisty about it. I think it's because they act like they have no idea what they are asking of people. So if you are asking for a commitment and you're offering some kind of reward, if the reward isn't money, I want the details. Exactly how many hours a week of commitment are you asking for? Completing exactly what duties? What will you do if the work that you ask of them exceeds the time limit that you've allotted for this position? And then for the rewards, where are you going to average, if it's exposure, where are you going to advertise that this person is part of your team? What are you going to do for free to make sure that the exposure, the experience, or whatever is actually valuable to that person compared to the work that you're asking them to do? I think this framing aspect is so important.
I have so many feels about this. I'll keep it to one thing. I've struggled with this a lot with a professional society that I'm closely involved with. There's even a crew of us who slowly over several years have been narrowing in on maybe a manuscript, maybe some kind of think piece, maybe just a call out. We don't know yet. The thing is that societies or institutions and institutions, all of them in my book, have a higher duty of care. They're the ones with clout, and frankly, their budgets far exceed most of ours. So even if they're not for profit or in some way ask for donations, they're still in a substantial position to vote with their dollars. Context. Then, so I used to cringe, and like you, now I bristle when I see this organization's annual or twice annual calls for folks to nominate themselves for governance level positions that are going to take up a whale of time. For free. And the societies doing this are literally asking members to do unpaid labor that if it were an outside consultant hired or even an employee, and often they do hire them too, that consultant would make like a quarter or a half year's wages. And they're asking people to do this same high level, intellectual, skilled, professional work for free. And I find this totally over the line. especially when the same institutions are simultaneously recruiting and bragging about the visible diversity in their membership or their leadership. There are people who cannot afford to volunteer for free, right? And we have this thing in academia and in the societies that are adjacent to academia where we assume that people can do what we call service. Mm-hmm. And it's even in my job description. It's 5% of my job description to volunteer for my university, my department, my profession. I think that's really cool because I like to volunteer. But we know these days, Virginia, you cite stats on this all the time. Most people who are in STEM don't go on to work in academia, mm-hmm. or definitely not as faculty. And we're still framing the operation of our systems as if everyone is getting paid to volunteer. And that's BS, piles of it. And I know I'm on a thing here, but there is also this hard reality that we continue to be disappointed by institutions in part because we want them to operate in ways that they consistently don't. So part of what the balance may be here is that it's the actions. This is the thing they do. At some point, I need to just recognize that this is how they do it instead of letting it take up free real estate in my head every time it happens.
But I'm coming back to this framing aspect. If someone said, please volunteer half your time for this thing, thank you, versus we understand this is a huge commitment. Unfortunately, our attempts to secure funding for this paid position have gone, unfulfilled. In the meantime, we are hoping that you would be able to work out a deal with your institution. If we could provide letters of support, let us know, that supports you and gets you the recognition. Like if somebody said that kind of a thing, I would be, the real estate taken up in my head would be a very different kind of lot than the one of people just put it out there.
Yeah. It's to me, I think what is egregious is this assumption that people who don't have privilege and access are going to just feel so special if they get picked to do this work. And there's like in the process of saying, ta-da, we have more diverse people on our board, we are also completely refusing to acknowledge the kind of time commitment and the intellectual investment we're asking from them. It's just over the line. I guess if it were easy, we'd have it sorted out.
Yeah, I was just thinking, how do I sum this? Because I like to summarize when we get to a certain point. And I was like, this was just like, oh, how do I summarize this state of things? Okay. Volunteering sucks, but like, except when it maybe doesn't. And so you could choose to do it if you like, but it's up to you. And then if you have an opportunity, you definitely should not ask for volunteers, except for the times when you should. this feels hard. So, all right. So let's move beyond that summary, just straight into the, like, I want to do a assignment, but I'm also like, what's the assignment here?
What if we ask people to take stock of what they do for free?
Okay. As I was saying out loud earlier, I said that I figured I volunteer a lot less than people who aren't freelancing. And as that came out of my mouth, I was like, do you know the number of hours that you volunteer? Do you know the number of hours Beth Ann volunteers? The answer is of course, no, because I don't even know how many hours. Okay. So thank you for the prompt. Dear listener, do you know how much and what you actually do for free? Take a moment. Think about this week. So keep this kind of contained. Think about this week. What have you done for free? Write it down. And then think through the purpose, pay, passion, prestige, triangle, hexagonal. Think through the meaning behind the things that you spent free time on this week. Where do they fall? And does that align with your personal and professional goals? If not, then do you think you could make a plan to get things into alignment for next week and the week after?
So Dear listener, if you really want to hold yourself accountable here, talk about what you wrote down with colleagues or someone else who plays that role in your life, or get in touch with us. We say it every week. We really would love to know what you think, in this case, about volunteering. Do you do it? How do you fit it in? How do you decide what you'll volunteer for versus what you have got to be compensated for?
You've been listening to Meteor, the honest podcast about science communication with impact. We have a short survey running right now on our website. Tell us what you think SciComm needs or what resources you want that you can't find for your own SciComm work.
To join this conversation, leave us a review, say hello on Twitter using @MeteorSciComm, or check out everything we do in addition to the podcast on our website, meteorsciComm.org.
Talk soon.